You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight, we're going to talk Adventures of Super Sons number 1, Batman number 52, Deathstroke number 34, Justice League number 5, Mr. Miracle number 10, and we're going to talk our top 5 favorite DC villains. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, for this year's Batman Day, which is on September 15th, DC has issued information about what it's going to be offering. So they're going to be doing a reprint of Batman Little Gotham number 1 and Batman White Knight number 1. And they're both supposed to have special Batman Day labeling.
Cool. Those are both good picks.
Yeah. So each reprint's only going to cost 25 cents per copy for retailers, and the publisher is encouraging the retailers to give them away for free.
Yeah. That's what I would do. I would not charge people for those. I don't know. That just seems to go against the point, I guess.
So, and then they're also going to be offering Batman Day mask. Batman, Batgirl, and Harley Quinn. And those aren't, I don't think those are supposed to be free, but.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I like both those picks are good because they're nice. Ends of the spectrum. One, Little Gotham obviously is for a younger audience, and then you've got White Knight, which is definitely for people our age that are reading them. So yeah, no, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. All right, and also in DC news, saw that the Red Hood was getting a new costume. Did you get a chance to see that?
I did. They've been showing it in the backs, I think, right? They showed it in the little DC preview magazine that they have. That one that they're putting out every month.
Oh,
that
yes.
That kind of goes behind the scenes and everything.
Yeah, I know.
DC Nation, right?
DC Nation, yep.
Yeah, they had an article in it on that, and it was pretty cool. I mean, the thing I think that caught my attention the most was that the costume was kind of seemed to be going hand in hand with a little bit of a new direction for the character. Also, he seemed to be going maybe a little darker. Is that what you saw?
That's what I got a feeling of, too. At least that's what they indicated.
So that'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, he is definitely the anti-hero of the, you know, Robin, former Robins. But he's never, other than with his, like, initial appearance, he's not really been, I wouldn't say, that dark. So this could be kind of interesting to see what they do with it.
All right. I want to bring something up to you that I heard, a rumor I heard. Maybe it was last weekend. It was either last weekend or the weekend before. I was at Kentucky Kingdom, and I was wearing my Batman shirt, I think. I was wearing my Flash. Anyways, one of the ride attendants is like, "Flash your favorite?" I said, "He's not my favorite. Batman's my favorite." And then he wanted to talk to me about the new Teen Titans show, because he had seen the preview for it, and he asked me what I thought of it, and I was like, "I didn't really care for how they are portraying Dick Grayson." And he told me he heard a rumor that Dick Grayson was supposed to become Red Hood and Jason Todd supposed to become Nightwing.
That doesn't sound true, but it's possible. I mean,
he'd heard it had something to do with television rights.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, the thing you can always do with that is that it's just set in an alternate universe where Dick Grayson became Red Hood instead. I mean, sure. Why not? I mean, I don't really get caught up in that. I definitely, you know, when I was younger, I used to be more like, it needs to be adapted exactly the way it is. But I don't know. I don't care as much with that. So if they can come up with an interesting story for that, why not? I know a lot of people won't like it, but I mean, they're already clearly doing something really different with that Titans team anyway. So I'm gonna be more of like, okay, what will it look like? Show me what it'll look like, and if it's good, sure, why not?
I just thought it was an interesting twist, one I didn't even think about, so.
Yeah, I mean, it is cool. I mean, and again, if you kind of take it from that, like, multiverse perspective, this is a different universe, and the different, like, these characters followed a different path, why not? I mean, we just read in the main Batman title, World where Dick Grayson becomes a gun-wielding Batman. So, and that story worked. I mean, it was definitely a very dark world, but it worked for that story. So that's the thing. I think if you can tell a good story with it, that's what the show needs to prove, is whether or not, you know, they can do these weird creative decisions. Can they execute them?
Yep. All right. And for our next bit of DC news, Scott Snyder has announced he's planning to do at least 50 issues for Justice League. And I got a quote from him. He says, "Just for clarity, I'm on Justice League for at least 50 issues. Not going anywhere for a long time," he tweeted, adding, "But every 5 or so issues, Justice League will be a Legion of Doom chapter where," I always butcher his name, "James Tynion IV tells a story from the villain side and reveals big secrets."
That's pretty cool. I kind of like that formula.
So, very interesting. I like it because, you know, Snyder gets to tell his story. Then he takes a break and lets another writer tell it from the villain's perspective. I think that's a pretty cool idea.
I do think that's cool. And also, I saw that as well, and it was very reminiscent of when King clarified that he was on Batman for, like, he's, at least according to him, is 100 issues, at least. I wasn't necessarily surprised by this, because this is sort of, DC is clearly trying to, this is part of their strategy, is getting a really good writer on a title and then just letting them stay there.
It's a good idea.
I've very much enjoyed the Justice League run so far. I also think Snyder proved with his own Batman run that the longer you let him work on a title, like, it gets better. You know, like, the intricacies start to kind of pay off, and you kind of get these really cool stories. I really don't see a downside there. I mean, if you're not a huge fan of his Justice League, I mean, you know, you can read other titles. It's not like Justice League was very good before this, so.
It couldn't get much worse, could it?
I can't imagine most people wouldn't prefer this over the previous version of Justice League. So, I mean, I'm sure there were some, but I can't imagine there are many.
And he also said that planning on doing these standalone story arcs, but they're going to all tie together sometime in 2019. So, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, in other DC news, Brent Spiner, Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, will play a recurring role in Season 4 of Supergirl. So he's going to be playing Vice President Baker, which sounds like it's going to be interesting, because this is what they had to say about his character. He'll be adept and politically minded. Vice President Baker makes an unlikely leader, but steps up in a big way when his country needs him most. So I'm wondering if something's going to happen to the president.
That's what it seems to suggest, doesn't it?
Yeah. And we already know that Linda Carter's played the president in the past. So if she reprises the role, we know she's an alien. So, and we got the kind of hint when we saw the trailer for the season that it was going to have something to do with aliens. So if she gets outed, he might have to take over as president.
Yeah, that's possible. Or it could be something where Linda Carter maybe isn't available, and so they're going to maybe use a story where the president is gone as a way to tell something with that office while still, you know, technically having her character involved off screen. I think that could be that could potentially be a workaround that they're doing as well.
Yeah. Could be. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Ruby Rose has been cast as Batwoman. And that's for the Arrow crossover and plus the series they're going to be doing.
Now, I read that they're saying that Batwoman is supposed to premiere mid-season, but it's not even...
I know, it's not even...
I don't understand. I cannot wrap my head around how that's going to happen, because they've not even filmed a pilot.
No, this is what I understand, Cletus. They're going to be doing a pilot, but the series hasn't even been ordered yet. They're probably expecting it to do well. I mean, if Berlanti's involved, or behind it. You know, he's been putting out some surefire things.
Oh yeah, it's not that I don't expect it to get picked up. It's the fact that they haven't made it yet. I don't know, man. I know it's only the beginning of August, but still, like, you know, Arrow and Flash and them have probably filmed, I would say, at least 2 or 3 episodes.
What I'm guessing is what we'll get, either just a pilot or we'll get a short season. That's what I'm guessing.
Oh yeah, I am sure it will be similar to Black Lightning, where it was, what was it, like 8 or 9 episodes?
Yep.
Which honestly I think is the right thing to do. If you're going to do a mid-season premiere, you know, make it a short season. I also think it helps. I think Black Lightning benefited from it a lot. It helps let you tell a really focused story where you can trim all of the filler out and have just this very clear, concise, you know, first season. I think it's a boon to a new show. So I think that's good. I feel like they're painting themselves into an unnecessary corner. Like, I feel like you don't need to give yourself that kind of deadline.
That, apparently that's what they're doing.
Don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand me. Like, I'm very excited to see this show. It's really cool that they're getting to use Batwoman. I'm hoping DC is relaxing their grip even a little bit more, and we might even get some other characters out too. Not with their own shows, but start to see, you know, other big name characters kind of pop up in the CW universe as well.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Green Lantern.
They've hinted so much at Green Lantern. Blue Beetle. Ted Kord exists in that universe. Yeah. Wonder Woman. We know Thymaskira exists there. I really think Wonder Woman would be a really cool one, to be honest with you.
It would.
If she, just imagine a crossover episode with her and Supergirl. Would that not be the most probable? I bet that would break the Superman episodes records.
Oh, I'm sure it would.
Audience, like, I don't know. I don't get DC's thought process, or if it's not even them, if it's Warner Brothers above them that's making, whoever is making that call, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't either. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant Gickory? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic.
Red leader, I'm sorry. I can't see it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Adventures of the Super Sons #1. So, Cletus, tell me, who's ready for the Summer of Super? I love this issue.
Yeah, it was really good. I also enjoyed, there was a couple moments where there was a little bit of a fourth wall breaking. You had John at the beginning technically was talking to Damian, but really was talking to the audience, looking like basically right at the camera. That was neat, saying, like, sorry it took me so long. And then the second one where they reference the longtime artist for Superman. that was great, too. Both of those I thought were really – I enjoyed the writing throughout it, but those two moments there kind of stood out to me as, like, the kind of the coolest moments that they threw in.
I really loved this issue. It was so much fun. I love Superboy standing back eating his popcorn. And he's just like, hey, you want me to help you? Because we all know that Damian probably told him, I could take this guy by myself.
Right.
And then he's like, yes, come help me. And it was hilarious. They're battling a statue of Superman that got animated.
Well, yeah, and then they stop the villain, and the villain almost asks them to, like, help promote his work. And John just goes right for it. He's like, oh, yeah, and then we just stopped the puppeteer. It's great.
Yeah, it was. And then Damian getting those extra punches in on John. And the other thing I really liked, and I wish we get more of this, seeing John and Damian actually interacting at school with other kids and stuff. I think that would be awesome to see, but obviously we're not going to get that here because it was the end of the school year.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And yeah, I agree. It would have been kind of nice to have a little more, you know, alternate identity interaction, but it's fine. What we got was still really fun.
It was. We had John running out of school, you know, acting like every other kid, excited for the summer. Then we got Damian, who's trying to get extra points.
With a 125 college, 125 page college thesis.
I know, it was friggin' hilarious, you know. And he's trying to even get more points than the extra he'd already gotten. It was hilarious.
He is his father's son.
All right. Well, we find out who the villains of the series is going to be, and it was very funny to see kid versions of the villains, but they were aliens. So we meet this gang, and we find out that we got Shaggy Boy, Ice Princess, Kid Deadshot, Brainiac Six, Joker Jr., and then their leader, Rex Luthor. I thought that was pretty good. This seems like it's going to be a really fun series.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, just the writing was super fun, the artwork. I mean, these two work so well together. I mean, just everything, the writing and the artwork just have this fun that kind of resonates from them.
Now, when when Lex Luthor brings out that gold kryptonite, I was trying to remember I think I've seen gold kryptonite before, but I didn't remember it draining a Kryptonian's powers. I was going to ask you if you remember that from any...
I know it definitely exists, but to be honest, when Rex pulled it out, I was like, I know that that's bad, but I can't remember why specifically.
And I'm pretty sure I've seen it back in the day. I thought I remembered a story with gold kryptonite, but I cannot for the life of me remember it. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure that goes all the way back to the Silver Age. If I'm remembering correctly, I think it's a very old concept. I just haven't seen it in a long enough time that when he said that that's what it did, I was like, okay, sure, yeah.
So I vaguely remember some sort of story back with it, maybe in the late 80s, early 90s even, but it's been such a long time, I can't honestly remember. You know, I am very excited about this. Oh, we forgot to mention, this of course takes place before the new Teen Titans, where we see a revamped version of Damian, and I believe it took place after the last issue of the Super Sons series. So in between there is when this time period is. Alright, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman number 52. Another great issue.
Yeah, this was really good. And this kind of expanded upon what we were talking about when we read the last issue, that this jury duty seems in part almost like a self-punishment to Batman, right? Where he's kind of doing this to himself to be like, look, like, I know I screwed up, and I've got to do certain things to be able to make up for the mistakes that I've caused.
Yeah. You know, and then in this issue, we actually find out more what's going on. We find out that Batman had found evidence that the police coroner missed when the body was examined. That evidence led Batman to Mr. Freeze. So you get the police look at the body, and they don't find what Batman finds when he checks the body. I think one of the things he is beating himself up over is the fact that he didn't take the time to go back and investigate why Gordon's people didn't find anything, and he did.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. He's saying that he got so caught up. I mean, clearly, his mind is so clouded right now because of what happened with Catwoman that he just kind of went and took his rage out. And he talked. And this is, I thought, the part that I enjoyed the most when he's talking about why Victor Freeze would admit to it. And he's like, if you were Victor Freeze and you, Batman beat just the living hell out of you, and that fear sticks, that beating sticks with you so much, why, of course you would keep saying, yeah, I did it, because you're afraid of Batman coming back and doing it again. Oh man, that part of the comic was so fascinating to me. And it also, this was the first time where it was like the bell kind of went off in my head, and it was like, oh, I bet this is the first kind of step in whatever Bane is up to. Because it didn't occur to me last issue, and then this one I was like, oh, I kind of see what's going on now.
I didn't even think about Bane, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because we know on some level Bane is up to something, because he knows what just happened with Catwoman, and he knows that Batman is not doing well. I mean, so now is the time to strike, and so this makes it. Of course, this would be the first step. You kind of lay these breadcrumbs to force him to do something, because he's not in the right state of mind to see what you're really up to.
And we've seen this from Bane in the past. During the Nightfall series, Bane psychologically and physically beat him down before he even confronted him himself, by letting all of Batman's villains out of Arkham Asylum.
That's the thing I've really enjoyed kind of throughout King's run, is that he kind of, more so I think than other writers recently, kind of seems to remember that that's what Bane originally was like, that he wasn't just a physical threat. And you really see the intellectual threat side of Bane, I think, in King's writing more so, at least than I've seen from other writers in recent years.
I have to agree with you on that. It feels more like Bane going back to core of who Bane is.
I think it makes him a more interesting villain, to be honest. I mean, just like a purely physical threat can only be so interesting for so long. You know what I mean? I think that this approach to Bane is what made him so popular in the first place. And I don't know why they kind of got away from that part.
My guess is probably because of Batman and Robin, the movie.
Yeah.
When they brought him to the big screen, he was just this big brute, not the intellect that we had seen in the comics.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So we get to the end of the issue, and it boils down to Bruce is arguing that Mr. Freeze is not guilty. Jury believes the opposite. They'd have to say that Batman was, well, I think what this is what it said in the comic, Batman is wrong, bad, incompetent, horrible, out of control, for the jury to swing the other way, and that Batman would have to not be the hero that Gotham thinks it is. So the jury is demanding that Bruce Wayne prove that, and Bruce says he can. And I think what Tom King wanted us to think at the end of this issue was that Bruce is going to reveal his secret identity. I think he's going to prove it some other way.
Oh yeah, me too. And I thought this is really where I thought that end really made me intrigued by what Bane is potentially up to, because isn't this kind of perfect? Is you kind of force Batman into this mistake, and the only way for him to rectify it is to tarnish his reputation as Batman.
Yeah.
Right? It's the perfect move, because if you're Bane, you know Batman will figure out his mistake. It's perfect, because you know he'll rectify it. He's Batman. He can't let it go. So of course he'll try and fix it, and the only way he can fix it is to, you know, turn public opinion on him.
Yep. Which... Now that you mention that, we're seeing the effects of that in Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So this probably is the start of it. Funny how that ties together, huh?
It's like, oh yeah, that's right. Doomsday Clock is in continuity.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Deathstroke number 34. I got one question for you, Cletus. What the hell did I just read?
Okay, my biggest complaint with this is that Priest goes out of his way to show, like, to the point of ridiculousness, how clever Deathstroke had to be to figure out that Bruce Wayne's manor is where the Batcave is. Like, it was absurd. He's like, yeah, you have all of these things are perfectly disguised except one thing, the dirt has the wrong radiation in it or something like that. And yet he goes through all of that, like, oh yeah, I am so smart that I was able to figure out from that tiny stupid little detail, but my main conclusion is that you are sponsoring Batman. It could not possibly be you. What?
I know.
What? It was so, I couldn't, when that moment kind of happened, when he's like, yeah, I know Batman will show up. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're smart enough to figure out that the freaking dirt outside doesn't belong there because of the level of, like, exposure to the weather. But you can't figure out that the dude that you're talking to that just led you down into the Batcave is not Batman?
I know, it was crazy.
Seriously? But, like, you know what I mean? It's like, why? It's easy to not question how people can't figure out that Bruce Wayne is Batman if you don't create a reason to ask the question. It's easy to forget about. But if you create reasons to ask the question like this, it just makes it absurd.
And I gotta tell you, I can't buy that Deathstroke would know all that detective stuff. You know what I mean? Just doesn't seem like him.
It fits a little bit with Chris Priest's version of Deathstroke. That wasn't that big of a stretch. I mean, it was very comic booky. Like, it was definitely extremely over the top, but it was, like, within the realm of a superhero comic book. Sure, fine. But then I had an easier time accepting that than accepting the fact that he couldn't then figure out that he could figure out that part, but couldn't figure out the last link that Bruce Wayne must be Batman.
I got another question for you too. How the heck did Bruce Wayne change so fast to come out as Batman?
It's a great question. Yeah. Well, and he seemed to know that Dick and Damian were Robins. Out of costume, like, just, you know, Dick Grayson, Damian Wayne were Robins, but then even still, he can't. This is what's so frustrating with Chris Priest is, like, he does these things that are kind of interesting, and then he just, like, writes himself out of it. I don't understand what he does sometimes.
The other thing I thought was interesting, because I don't remember this anywhere else in the series, we find out that Tim Drake is dead. And that means the story has to take place before A Lonely Place of Living.
Yeah, which I thought was
really weird.
Odd, yeah, that they didn't just tell this story earlier. I don't know. It makes it very confusing, I think. Although, to be honest with you, I would be a little bit surprised if this ends up being something that people are reading years down the road. I feel like it's just something that's just going to go by the wayside because it's so confusing and kind of forgettable at the same time.
Yeah, it doesn't have much rereadability.
And yet, I think it requires you to reread it. Like, when the final issue comes out, the next one comes out, I feel like to fully appreciate whatever the hell this has been going on in this story, you're going to really need to read that last one and then go back and reread the other ones, because Priest is doing that weird sort of storytelling out of order. But he's doing it too much. It's so much. It's too much that you can't. You almost would need to, like, cut the comic up and kind of, like, paste it together in order for the story.
I have to tell you, I was very surprised when I got to the end of the issue and it wasn't over. I'm like, oh, it's not over? What left do we have to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought this was the last issue of it, and it's going on another one. And then the other thing I couldn't figure out, I still don't know what Alfred and Wintergreen were up to.
No, yeah, I'm kind of done trying to figure out this story. Yeah. I was giving it the benefit of the doubt for a while, but at a certain point, I was like, it's just bad.
don't worry, folks. We're gonna talk about Deathstroke number 35 when it comes out, because we've been following it this long. We gotta wrap the sucker up. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League number 5. Very, very interesting to see the origin of the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, I agree. I also, one of the things I thought was the most intriguing in this was that I wasn't expecting there to be a tie-in to the first kind of Lex Luthor scene we had. I think it was in issue 1 where he goes to that American Legion Hall. I kind of thought that that had been further in the past. And then we see here that that was actually fairly recent and leads, and it is ultimately one of the major steps towards the Legion of Doom being founded.
Yeah. After they come back from Justice, No Justice is when that happens. Because I think basically Luthor, from what I understood from this story, Luthor found out that entropy was more abundant than the other energies in the universe. And that made him wonder why he was doing what he was doing.
I still kind of, that still wasn't quite enough for me. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it was at least an explanation of like why he stopped being a hero, but it was still, I don't know. It was kind of telling and not showing. I still kind of felt like I needed something a little more than that. I know it's Lex, so it was easy to believe, but it was like, that's such a vague explanation.
Yeah, it was vague. You would think that he would need some sort of more of a tragedy of something happening to make him flip like that. But,
and I will say, I actually just recently reread the arc where he's trapped on Apocalypse, and even the end of that I thought was still, I don't know, not quite enough. I mean, I guess if you take both of those things combined, you can kind of see it, but it still just feels incomplete. Like both of those things seem like steps towards him falling and becoming a villain again, but it still feels like, you said, it feels like there's something missing. Like there's that last kind of missing link that normally happens in these stories that causes that fall back into villainy, that's just kind of not there. It's sort of like, it's just basically he just shrugged his shoulders and was like, I guess I'll be evil again.
Now, one of the things I thought was great in this episode, we had two great interactions, Lex and Sinestro and Lex and Gorilla Grodd. They really focused on those two, I thought, with starting the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, and I think, so those, especially the Sinestro conversation, I really liked. And also kind of the promise that each of the other members has some other purpose. We just don't know what those are yet. That he has each of those Legion of Doom members is there for a very specific reason. Like Sinestro is there specifically for the Ultraviolet Core. Grodd is there specifically for the Still Force. And what are those other guys there for?
Yeah, they haven't revealed that yet.
And that's the thing. It was like, oh yeah, okay. What are they there for? I'm hooked.
Yeah, I am too.
This was good. I've enjoyed this Justice League run so far, but this I thought was my favorite issue just because it had the most promise to me, I guess. Like I finally kind of understood kind of some of the stuff that was going on. I'm like, ooh, okay, and where's this going now?
One thing I really liked in this issue is the in-depth look at the Legion of Doom's headquarters and an explanation of what it was and why it was hard to find. I thought that was interesting in itself. So, and then we get to the end of this issue, and of course, Lex Luthor has control of Superman's body. Which, if you think about it, that's kind of like the ultimate Lex Luthor dream, is to be in control of Superman.
Oh yeah, to be Superman, essentially. Yeah, of course. Even when he was a hero, that's basically what he was doing.
Yeah, very interested in seeing what happens next. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Mr. Miracle number 10. Another great issue.
I'm already upset that there are only two left.
So the issue opens up. We see Scott Free is out drinking with the guys, Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. I thought that was freaking hilarious.
That was amazing.
I knew you'd love it.
Blue and gold and red and green and yellow.
Oh man,
it was awesome. I mean, it was my favorite. I would not say it was actually the best scene in the comic, but it was definitely my favorite scene because it had Booster in it.
So one of the things we see in this issue, Scott doesn't know what he's going to do. You know, he's the High Father. Darkseid has made his offer to give up his son to end the war. And Scott is undecided on, you know, do the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, basically, to use Star Trek analogy.
Yeah.
And Big Barda, when he tries to bring it up, she goes ballistic. Her mind is made up. It's no. But we see Scott debating it back and forth through this issue. He's really having problems deciding what to do. We even see him when he's taking a shower. He just balls up like a baby.
Yeah.
On the floor of the bathroom, just can't make up his mind.
Well, and I think one of the brilliant things with this dilemma is that it is, I think, a true dilemma, because on the one hand, like, the benefits potential is, assuming that the dark side follows through on it, which you never know, the benefits are enormous. Like, he agrees to every single surrender condition, you know, so it's like you have to consider that. But then on the other hand, like, what a horrendous idea to give your son over to Darkseid. And so I think that's what I thought made the comic so interesting, is that it's not a very clear-cut decision. Build is something that's hard. It is a legitimately hard decision, and you can see both sides of the argument.
Yeah, and when we actually see them discuss it, and Scott's like, you know what, we didn't turn out that bad. And Barda, she's like, yes, we did.
Yeah, we did. And it was hard to disagree with her point. She's like, remember how this comic started?
we're screwed up.
Yeah.
So I like Scott's final decision in this. He came up with the decision on his own, it seemed like, one that he knew Big Barda would go for. And he decided the best thing to do was tell Darkseid that they're going to agree and then try to kill him, which I don't see that going down in Scott's favor.
No, I see it going terribly. Like, I'm so nervous for the next issue. I'm really curious to see where this series is going to go, because I'm sure that that interaction is going to happen in the next issue. And then what happens in number 12? Whew.
Yeah. My gut tells me number 11 is not going to end well. It's going to end really bad. And we're going to be going, come on, we need issue number 12.
Yeah, give us a happy ending. I cannot wait. This has been so good. And it just keeps, like, I wouldn't necessarily say that every issue is getting better, but the story, just because you keep getting more of the story, I mean, I just keep appreciating it more and more. And it's just, man, this has been a great ride so far, at least for me. I have just been a huge fan of this series.
It's my favorite of the miniseries that DC's put out so far.
Yeah. Man, so good.
All right, well, that wraps up Comic Books Talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our top 5 favorite DC villains.
Do you like movies? Do you like TV?
Do you like discussing the temporal effects of non-linear time travel and its implication on the plot of the movie Looper?
Okay. Do you enjoy the latest in pop culture news? Do you enjoy superheroes?
Do you enjoy discussing the relative merits of superpowers and their effects on human physiology?
Anyways, if you enjoy these things, even a small amount, you'll love the Rusted Robot Podcast.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, YouTube, and make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Subscribe so you never miss an episode.
TheRustedRobot.podbean.com.
And we're back. Let's talk our top 5 favorite DC villains. All right, Cletus, I went first last time, so you're going to go first this time, and we're going to start with our number 5 and work up to 1.
All right. So with my top 5, I also decided to include my favorite comic that villain appears in. So a little bit like my usual recommendations for the week, but I have a different one for each of my 5 villains. Okay, so number 5 for me, and this one's kind of cheating a little bit, but I don't know that you can view them separately. I feel like they have to be kind of considered as a group, is the Crime Syndicate. more like the evil Earth 3 versions of the Justice League. So you've got Owlman, Ultraman, Superwoman? Yeah. And it's a couple of the others. I can't remember all their names. They're all the way back from the Silver Age. They were in, I think it was the second ever big like crisis event, annual crisis event that DC would do. And they allow for some really cool storytelling, and they obviously have been very influential. I mean, you even saw the Justice Lords in the Justice League animated series are very clearly inspired by the Crime Syndicate. Obviously, they're a little bit different, but they're inspired by them. And it's so cool seeing these sort of evil, twisted versions of the Justice League, but they're on like a fundamental level. It's not the same. Like, the Justice Lords, to me, differentiate because they were heroes at one point and became corrupted through circumstances into becoming villains, whereas the Crime Syndicate, truly, they're just terrible people. Like, at their core, they're villains. Just the earth that they're on, that's what people are like. My favorite story of theirs is the most recent one that they appeared in, which was Forever Evil. They are the main antagonists of that, and that is one of my favorite comics to come out in the last, I'd say, 5 to 6 years or so. I mean, because I love DC villains. And that was, it's villain versus villain, and it's got the Crime Syndicate just at their most nasty. And they're very powerful in that, too. They're not, you know, they're not played off as a joke. They are good at what they do. It's a really, really good story. And it's got Lex leading a band of villains to fight them. And it's kind of interesting. And that was sort of the beginning of his hero arc. And he is not acting very heroically in that. Other than that, he's the one saving the day. But Johns writes it so well. Highly, highly recommend you check out Forever Evil.
All right. My number 5 is The Trickster. And I don't know much about the comic version of The Trickster, but I love The Trickster from the 90s Flash, played by Mark Hamill. There's only 2 episodes in that series, because it was only 1 season. But I love how he plays the Trickster in that. And those 2 Trickster episodes from that series were my favorites. Just loved Mark Hamill's version of them.
Yeah, I mean, the a couple times that he's popped up in the modern Flash have been great episodes as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I had to, you know, if I had to pick favorite DC television show episodes, those 2 Trickster episodes would be high up on my list. All right, let's go on to number 4.
Okay, my number 4. We've been talking about him a bunch. I just mentioned him, Lex Luthor. My number 4. My first experience with his character was the Gene Hackman Lex Luthor from the Superman the movie. He's very different in that than the modern portrayal of Lex Luthor, and I have to say, generally, I mean, as much as I love that movie, I do like the modern Lex more. Not the modern film Lex, but the modern comic book Lex Luthor, just the way he's just, you know, exactly like how we're seeing him in Justice League right now, or in Forever Evil, where he is the true criminal mastermind. He is just brilliant, extremely intelligent, and able to make up for the fact that he really is just a human. I mean, he's almost in a lot of ways. One of the things I thought was interesting coming out of Forever Evil that John's kind of explored a little bit is that I think in many ways Lex is a little bit like a villainous Bruce Wayne. You know, I mean, this guy who's a genius and who has unlimited resources, you know, instead of applying them for good like Batman does, he essentially applies them in the opposite direction. And I just think that makes him such a good villain. My favorite comic, and I've recommended this one before, that Lex is in is All-Star Superman. Many different Superman villains that pop up in that run, but his particular arc is so fascinating, especially because at a certain point, he gets to experience the world as Superman experiences it, and you really kind of see this shift in the character where he finally sort of gets it, where he kind of like, oh, this is why Superman is Superman. And it's one of my favorite moments in that entire comic. And that whole comic is amazing. So highly recommend All-Star Superman. And Lex is definitely not a major character in it, but he's very present throughout most of it and is really good in it.
I think my best version of Lex Luthor is usually when the public perceives him as a good guy, but behind the scenes, he's not. That's always seems to be my best interpretation, or the Lex Luthor I like the most.
Yeah.
Where he acts like a good guy, but he's got the secret ulterior motive where he's trying to defeat Superman. I think that's always a great version of Lex.
I agree.
All right. My number four pick is Bane, and I really like the Bane from the Nightfall series. Just because, like we talked about earlier, of course, being a big Batman fan, the intellect of Bane, just that storyline where he releases all of Batman's villains, and Batman has to get through every one of them before he gets to Bane. And Bane has broke him mentally and physically, and by the time he gets to him, he just basically takes him and breaks his back. Batman was basically broken before Bane broke his back. His redemption from that is just a great story, and I've always found that version of Bane the best version.
That I agree completely. And when you mentioned it earlier, that the negative impact that the Batman and Robin movie had on that character is very true, because I will admit, when I was growing up, that was my first interaction with that character, and that's what I thought he was like. I just thought he was kind of this meathead lunk, and I was like, eh, not for me. And it was only later that I actually read Nightfall, and I read a few other things, and I was like, oh, okay. Why did they do him that way in the movie?
That has always bothered me. But I'm glad to see DC, at least Tom King, is trying to get him back to his roots.
Yeah.
Chuck Dixon just wrote a 12-issue miniseries called Bane Conquest that kind of takes Bane back to his roots. But he's not after Batman in that story. He is going after... Shoot, I'm trying to think. All that pops in my head is Hydra, but whatever DC's secret villainous organization is, I can't even think of them right now. But that's a good series, and of course Batman's in it, so
it's not Spiral, is it?
No, it's not Spiral.
Okay.
This is an evil society, and I can't remember what the heck they're called off right now.
Cobra? I know that's another one. They've kind of changed it to be a society.
Yes, it's Cobra. Thank you for bringing that up. So, yeah. So, that's an interesting story. And it brings in a lot of Bane's henchmen, too, like Bird and some of the other ones we see during the original Nightfall series. So, if you haven't checked it out, I know we didn't talk about it on the podcast, but I was reading it on the side, and it was pretty good, so... All right, let's move on to our number three.
Okay, number three for me is Reverse Flash. I do think the TV show had definitely had an impact on this. I definitely very much enjoyed this villain, but he was so good, both as the season one villain, I would say easily the best villain that that show has had. And then when we got him again on Legends of Tomorrow, he was just as good on that show. And I just, being such a great TV villain, it really kind of raises their profile for me, and I think for a lot of people. But also my favorite comic that he's in is probably my favorite Flash comic is Flashpoint. And I would even kind of include Flash Rebirth as sort of a precursor to this. He is such a good villain in both the TV and in the Flashpoint, because you can really see how much his hatred of Barry has just truly corrupted him into this monster that he was either, I mean, depending on the version of his character, he was either a good person or, you know, an okay person prone to mistakes. But over time, his hatred of Barry Allen has just twisted and morphed him into just this truly evil monster. Just a fantastic villain. So yeah, like I said, Flashpoint, that's the big one. Flash Rebirth, I would also kind of include in that, because to me, those two kind of go hand in hand. I would recommend reading both of those.
Reverse Flash is a great pick, and I left him off my list just because I thought you'd have him on your list.
you were right.
Because I wanted to bring on another character that had a big impact on me, and my number three, I put Zod. And the reason I picked Zod was because he had such an impact on me when I was a kid in Superman 2. That was my favorite of the Christopher Reeve movies, and I've watched it over and over and over again. I loved Zod in that movie, And I loved having somebody who was just as powerful as Superman, just as intelligent as Superman, and, you know, a foe that could actually take him out.
I know it's maybe not a widely held opinion, but I really like the Zod in the Man of Steel movie as well. I would argue that he's the best villain of the modern DC universe. Not necessarily maybe the best movie, but, I mean, a lot of the other villains, I think, are a lot more one-note than he is.
I don't think I've seen Man of Steel again since my first viewing of it, but I have to say Zod in that was a good villain.
I really enjoyed it, and I liked how out of control he was. I mean, he truly is unhinged at the end of that movie. And also Michael Shannon, in my opinion, is a really great actor. And it's also a really great actor to play somebody like Zod specifically. I enjoyed that portrayal. I don't enjoy everything about that movie, but personally for me, I'm a big fan of Zod in that film.
All right, let's move on to our number two.
So for my number one and number two, they're really like 1A and 1B. It's hard for me to choose between the two of them. So I'm just going to list this one as number two, but really it's almost in a neck and neck tie for number one. Number two for me is Sinestro. This should be no surprise to anybody who listens to the podcast. I love this villain. He is the Green Lantern villain, I think. It's him, and then miles below that is any other Green Lantern villain. He is so good and so well suited to be a Green Lantern villain. One of my greatest, like, for me, tragedies of the Green Lantern film is that Sinestro is actually really good in that movie. Mark Strong plays him amazingly, and the rest of that movie is not good. And it always kind of breaks my heart a little bit, because I'm like, oh man, they nailed Sinestro. I mean, they didn't really get a lot else right, but if they could have just like extracted him from the movie and brought him into some of the future installments, I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay, honestly, with Mark Strong playing two different villains. He's playing Dr. Savannah, just for clarification. He is one of the two villains that I wrote about in my master's thesis, which focused on this idea, especially that DC was exploring. Marvel does it too. The idea of the tragic hero, kind of following the formula of Aristotle's tragedy, where you have this hero, or in this case a villain, kind of get built up over time, and then there's a moment where, due to the mistakes that they have made, there's a fall, whether it's like for Sinestro it's the destruction of his planet, and then instead of accepting their blame, kind of looking back and seeing that they are the one that caused that, they blame somebody else, and that's really truly at their core what makes them a villain. And his arc through Johns' run fits that perfectly and is so good. So, I mean, I can't recommend necessarily Johns' entire run, even though I recommend Johns' entire run. Specifically, though, if I just picked one, it would definitely be the Sinestro Core War. It's such a good Green Lantern story. I think if you give somebody, you want to get them into Green Lantern, you hand them the Sinestro Core War. It's so good.
All right, and for my number two, it is also Sinestro.
Great minds think alike.
Yes. So all the reasons Cletus said Sinestro, and I was also reading Green Lantern back during the Emerald Dawn stories, where the origin story of Hal Jordan, and then we got to see how he got trained by Sinestro, and then why Sinestro ended up going bad. He basically, and I think that's how they should have done the Green Lantern movie too. Hal Jordan went to his world. He was basically a dictator there.
Yeah. And this is specifically Emerald Dawn 2.
Yeah.
This takes place in, for readers, just in case you're curious which one this is in. Emerald Dawn 2, I actually also incorporated into my paper because it has a lot of those on a much smaller scale than Johns's. It has that same sort of tragic arc. And Sinestro does the same thing where, you know, you see him built up as the greatest Green Lantern. Like you said, they find him in this dictatorship, and then he blames everybody else but himself for this. It's a good story. I definitely recommend that one as well. Yeah,
I do too. It's great. All right, and now to our number one.
So my number one, again, if you've listened to our podcast a lot, you probably will know this. It's Black Adam. He is such a good villain, especially specifically modern interpretations of Black Adam. He is the other, him and Sinestro were the two that I focused on in my paper. And one of the things I talked about is how a lot of the kind of earliest versions of Black Adam are kind of racist. they're not like overtly, but there's a lot of kind of coded racism there against Middle Eastern people. And it still can kind of pop up occasionally. From an academic standpoint, that's interesting to me, kind of see why that is. But from a comic book fan perspective, the modern stories with him have been really good, because you can see this guy where they kind of gotten into more of the fact that he was once the champion of Shazam, and there had to be a reason for that. And they kind of get into seeing that man that he used to be, that's still there somewhere inside him, but then it's kind of been corrupted by all of the other violence that he's been exposed to, and the tragedies that he's lived through have really kind of morphed him into this extremely violent person who does not hesitate to seek retribution on a occasionally massive scale. The story that I would recommend the most for Black Adam, there's a few good ones, but 52. It's a massive story. Don't get me wrong. Like, if you're going to sit down and read it, save a few days. But his arc in 52 is phenomenal. It is so good. You get the entire kind of build up of his character. You really kind of see the potential, kind of see that hope, that light at the end of the tunnel that, oh, maybe Black Adam can redeem himself. And then things kind of go from there. And then there are some really good stories that kind of spin out from out of that story. He's a very complex character. I would love The Rock to finally actually play him on screen. He's been signed on to be the guy forever. I want to see it at some point, just because I Black Adam, man. He's my favorite. That is my number one villain. Regardless of the company, Black Adam is my favorite.
I hope he makes a cameo in the Shazam movie.
Yeah, I will say, I do like that he's not the main bad guy of this one. I do like that it's Savannah, but I agree with you. I'm kind of hoping that maybe he's there, you know, somehow, like, at the end you find out that he's really the actual threat there. I really want Black Adam to pop up on the film screen.
That would be awesome. All right, and for my number one pick, and it's probably going to be no surprise, the Joker. And only because I'm such a big Batman fan, and Joker's always been the main nemesis of Batman. I mean, Batman has a good rogues gallery, but the Joker has always been his number one villain. Yeah. And there's been so many iterations of Jokers over the years, and different takes on them that have been interesting. I mean, we've had some not so great interpretations of Joker, and we've had some really great interpretations of the Joker, you know, in comics and on screen.
Yeah.
So, and he's always a fun character. One thing I liked about him is he doesn't have one origin story. He's got these multiple origin stories out there that, yeah, he could have came from here, he could have came from here, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's always been kind of a mystery of what Joker's origin is. And on top of that, it doesn't really matter, honestly.
And he's got, I would say, easily a top five all-time movie villain appearance in The Dark Knight. Heath Ledger's Joker is, I know it maybe is a cliche to reference it, but man, he is so, it's so good.
It is so good. And the Joker, he's so unpredictable. Which is great, because you can write him different ways. So yeah. I'm very excited about the three Joker story that's going to be coming up soon.
And I have to admit, I'm not sold on the idea, but I'm kind of I'm intrigued by what this Joaquin Phoenix movie is going to be. I'm not sold that it'll necessarily be good, but the people that are getting involved in that movie are good enough that I'm like, okay, what are we going to do with this? This could maybe be interesting.
Now that you made me think about it, back in the day, the Joker used to, he would die in old, I think it was during, I don't know if it was during the Golden Age or Silver Age, but Joker would die and then he'd come back.
Yeah.
And
the Golden Age, he dies, and I think like his first three appearances, he appears to die.
Yeah. And it always had a tendency to come back. And I always thought that was interesting. The thing about the Joker is you could bring back a totally different Joker and he'd still work.
Yeah.
So, but yep, that's my number one villain.
It's hard to argue with the Joker.
All right, and we also heard, we sent out a call to you guys, and we did hear from one person. We're hoping to hear from more of you guys. But we heard from Al Bruno III from the Night Blogger podcast. And his list, starting with number 5, is Gorilla Grodd. Number 4, Darkseid. And his favorite version of Darkseid's from the Great Darkness saga is his best version.
I've not read that. Interesting.
Number 3 is Clayface. Clayface number 3, Preston Payne. Back in the 80s, there was 3 different versions of Clayface. Now my mind went blank. But there were 3 versions of Clayface. And Clayface 3, I have to say, I liked that version the best, too, at the time. Number 2, the Anti-Monitor. And his number 1 favorite villain is Solomon Grundy.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's a cool list. I like that list.
That is a good list. All right, well, if you guys would like to, because we'll still read them next week if you guys want to send them in to us, all you have to do is call our feedback line at 317-564-9133, leave us a message, and we'll play it on the show, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com, or you can, if you can find the buried post now on the Facebook group, you can also post it on there.
Or just post a new comment, too. That works, too, for us.
All right, Cletus, you got any shout-outs?
I'm just going to reiterate the comics that I recommended for these villains. Forever Evil, All-Star Superman, Flashpoint, Sinestro Corps War, and 52. They're all fantastic, but the one I think is the most true to this kind of villain theme would definitely be Forever Evil. It is full villain versus villain awesomeness. It's a really fun title.
All right, and for my shout out, I was at Gen Con this Sunday, and at the booth they had the DC deck building game, and I found the Arrow television series pack. It's not a full game. It's a like an add-on to your regular deck, but it had the has the Arrow characters in it, and I thought it was pretty cool, so I got it.
I didn't even know that was out.
Yep. So we'll have to get together and play that sometime, Cletus. I haven't even played it yet with the boys. We haven't had time, but I'm looking forward to playing that. All right, coming up next week, we have Catwoman number 2, Detective Comics number 986, Supergirl 21, Superman number 2, The Flash number 52, and the Titans number 24. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.